Oh shit.
What?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another action-packed edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. I'm Joe, that's Manish, Burge alongside as well. Boys, there's a lot to get to. I'm struggling to keep my pants on right now due to the Patriots, another successful weekend, but we're going to bury that lead. We're going to get to everything else crazy that happened this weekend. We have Jets on and off field. We have firings, hirings. We have all of it. But, boys, how are we doing today?
I'm doing a lot better now than I was about 30 minutes ago to this recording. I couldn't wait to escape down to my, we'll call it my man corner in my basement to start talking football with you fine gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about the Patriots because I haven't heard enough about it via text over the last 4 or 5 days.
The group chat has been popping off.
Just get ready for another decade of windmill 360 between the legs, reverse two-handed slams, dude. Just get ready for it. But without further ado, we have our first coach fired of the year. Titans went ahead and fired their coach. Last name Callahan. His first name always escapes me. But they went ahead and fired him. I think it was 22 games. 23 games into his tenure there.
4-19.
4-19 with the Titans. End up naming Mike McCoy as their interim coach. Dude, I think the Titans, you guys shared that graphic about number one overall picks. I'll let you run with whatever with that if you guys want to. I'm not a believer in the Titans. I think they got a couple young, interesting pieces, but I don't think the program is run correctly down there. I think you need a lot of infrastructure and structure for the young guys in a young team like that. This, you could probably see this coming from a mile away.
Yeah, I mean, that graphic that we shared in that group chat just kind of was like, for me, I honestly didn't realize it was that significant, but it's the fourth consecutive team that has had the number one overall pick with a quarterback has had their coach fired. It's unbelievable. I think, Matt Eberflus was last year with the with the Bears. The other ones are escaping me right now, but the fact
Trevor
that
Lawrence, it was
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, it was, what was the other one? It wasn't Joe Burrow. Was it Joe Burrow?
No.
No.
Yeah, I forget. I forget. Sorry, who it was. We should have the graphic up, but anyway.
Ill-prepared. But yeah, that graphic is wild. I also think it's a wild with what the dysfunction of that organization has shown over the last couple of years with the firing of John Robinson, then the firing of Mike Vrabel, to the firing of Ron Carthlon. Is that how you say his name? I'm not sure, 100% sure how to say his name. The GM.
Ran Carthlon. And now
Ray Carthlon. Sorry.
Ran Carthlon.
Ran Carthlon. Thank you. Thank you, Manish. Glad you're here.
A hot start.
I know. Hey, I'm just, my head's spinning for the buried lead here. But yeah, you see that. And now the fact that Mike Vrabel in New England, as a matter of fact, has the same amount of wins that his predecessor, the guy that they hired to replace him, had in 2 years with Tennessee. It's just wild, the dysfunction going on down there. And I'm glad the Patriots are playing him this week.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you look at the record, 4-19, obviously is terrible, but he has only had Cam Ward. Brian Callahan has only had Cam Ward for, you know, a little over a month. So to say that he was fired largely due to Cam Ward's lack of development or growth to this point, which is what the Titans company line was after he was fired, I think is a little bit disingenuous because you need to at least have one full season. The other guys who were fired pretty much at the end of the first season. I don't think these guys were fired in season, but Trevor Lawrence, we mentioned with Urban Meyer, Caleb Williams, Matt Eberflus last year, and Bryce Young and Frank Reich in Carolina. So to cut the cord with a coach because you think he hasn't developed his young quarterback, the number one overall pick, 6 weeks into the season seems a little bit disingenuous. There was obviously other issues that management and front office had with Brian Callahan. They do have an interesting dynamic in terms of power structure with their owner and the team president who hired Mike Borgonzi from Kansas City to be the general manager. Questions about whether Borgonzi has full reign over making these types of decisions or if he has to answer to the team president. So it's an interesting power dynamic in that organization. Either way, they've been an absolute train wreck since Mike Vrabel was fired. And, you know, we can get into much later. We can get into, you know, how Vrabel's probably going to have the last laugh and how I'm sure they're going to dominate against Tennessee this week. But yeah, a dysfunctional front office, I would say. I don't know how good Cam Ward's going to be. I don't particularly think he's going to be that good. But again, to cut ties with your offensive-minded head coach a handful of games into the season with the number one overall pick seems dysfunctional, to say the least.
Well, and I feel like these teams keep making the same mistake. They have these lame duck head coaches that had a bad enough record to get the number one overall pick, and they don't cut bait and just start anew with, like imagine if somehow – like the Bears, I know this is impossible, but the Bears have Ben Johnson last year and they go 2 years. And now this is the second year of development for for Caleb Williams. You look at last year with Gerard Mayo, they cut bait with him. And then I just feel like there's these lame duck coaches pairing them with the number one overall pick and then calling it a developmental issue. Is just like you said, it's pretty disingenuous. It doesn't make any sense to pair these guys with a lame duck, the number one overall pick, the most probably valuable asset in Tennessee's history since probably Steve McNair. Like, you know what I mean? Like you, and you pair that with a lame duck head coach. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, what I'll say, Joe, is that, you know, in retrospect, yeah, Brian Callahan was a lame duck because the power structure above him changed, but you do want to be careful and not fire coaches after one season, because then that job becomes radioactive. And I can tell you that, sure, from the outside looking in, you can say, well, someone's always going to want to coach one of these teams because there's only 32 of these jobs left. But the prime candidates, the guys who are coveted, who have other options, are not going to want to go to places if there's continuous turnover after 1 or 2 years. We saw that about a decade or so ago with Cleveland when they were kind of churning through their head coaches. And interesting enough, another coach who's been discussed being on the hot seat is Aaron Glenn with the Jets. They're 0-6. He's only 6 games into his tenure. So I understand the knee-jerk reaction saying, hey, we got to get rid of this guy. We got to move on. But I do think the Titans were in a precarious position because Callahan was just beginning his second season. So in a 4-year, 5-year deal in all likelihood. So I wouldn't necessarily have called him a lame duck. I just think that there are things I'm sure that we're not privy to that were, you know, that was the real cause for this divorce, because again, giving up on a coach who's only had a handful of games to work with his young quarterback, his rookie quarterback, is highly unusual. So you do walk a fine line. You don't want to be a radioactive job where you're firing coaches after 1 or 2 years consistently.
And you know, that's the thing. These owners, we see it. I think Vegas is the most recent example of it with Mark Davis, as these guys come in. And they're quick to the trigger to fire these guys, and they don't allow these coaches to really install their culture, their program, and really to build on it. You know, you need more than a year and a half to really install your program. And to Brian Callahan's defense, like, he had what, 4 games with his rookie quarterback. So like, you're not really getting anywhere. You're not really allowing him an opportunity to build what he's trying to do there. And that's what bad franchises do. They hire a guy and they fire him a year and a half later. The Chicago Bears are a prime example of it.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's more with the rookie quarterback. You know what I mean? Like having that coach, like what's the point of it? The culture, like, we're going to get into a whole different discussion here, but like, let's say if you have like a lame, what could quote unquote a lame duck head coach, like my thing is like, if you're going to draft the number one overall pick, you either need to fire that coach before the season starts, or you need to give him the whole next year to try to see if they can find something. Cause that's like, look what happened to Dan Campbell. You know what I mean? He has a bad first season and then he catches fire in the middle of his second season. And now look where they are now. So I guess I should have worded it a little better, but you guys are right. You don't want to keep turning over coaches, have a radioactive job, and now you're not even an attractive like place to go with the number one overall pick. Like a certain franchise we love to talk about on this podcast, had a fun weekend on and off the field. Manish, this is your niche category here, man. I'll let you take this one away.
Are we talking about the New York Jets?
Oh yeah, baby.
Yeah, well, look, they're the only winless team in the NFL. Unfortunately for Aaron Glenn, who is a terrific guy. I mean, I know fans don't really care about that because it's about wins and losses. unfortunately for him, they were on, had the standalone game last week in London. So everybody saw just kind of how shaky, I should say, they are at this point. You know, clock management, lack of belief in the quarterback, the quarterback's inability to, you know, complete a forward pass for more than whatever, 45 yards. After the game, in the media press conference, Aaron Glenn bristled at what I thought was a completely fair question about whether Justin Fields would be the quarterback this week. When a quarterback has negative 10 net passing yards, I think it's a fair question to ask. But yeah, look, not a lot has gone right. You know, the notion of firing him now is obviously ludicrous. As previously stated, I think the notion of firing anybody after one season as a head coach or two seasons as a general manager, remember they have a new general manager as well, I think that's kind of ridiculous as well. But the Jets are a lost franchise. I mean, we just talked about a lost franchise in Tennessee. I think the Jets are right there with him. They really don't have a plan at quarterback for the future. And I don't want to drone on about this, but I will say that the Jets front office made a terrible mistake signing Justin Fields to a 2-year, $40 million contract, $30 million of which is guaranteed. Meanwhile, one of the MVP candidates in the NFL, Daniel Jones, is on a 1-year, $14 million deal. And Mac Jones in San Francisco is on a 2-year, $8 million deal, I believe. So effectively, the Jets paid double the cost of Mac Jones and Daniel Jones, and clearly they're not getting the returns of either one of those guys from Justin Fields.
Bruce, you know, any thoughts on your favorite team?
I mean, I love to see it. I love to see the dysfunction out of New York. I mean, I mean, Manish, you really hit the nail on the head with that. A historically bad offense, minus negative 10 yards on Sunday. I was kind of taken aback when I saw Glenn get defensive about that question about Justin Fields, because I mean, obviously go back a decade when Bill Belichick was taking the questions about Brady after that Monday night debacle against Kansas City. And, you know, Justin Fields is not Tom Brady. And just seeing, just, I can't even put the thoughts in my head, right? Cause like for a coach to get that defensive about a guy who really hasn't established himself as an NFL quarterback. I mean, he's had spurts, but he hasn't really sustained it. He was, you know, a backup last year in Pittsburgh, and in Chicago he showed flashes, but like it was nothing special. So like, I think it's a perfectly fair question to ask. And the fact that he got defensive about it, I mean, maybe there was just some emotion after the loss where that came from that played into it. I was kind of taken aback with his disrespectful response to that question.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry, Joe, real quick. It's a high pressure situation. You know, being in New York is a crucible. You know, I can tell you that firsthand. But when you have a game, and I really don't want to keep piling on, but there's a couple of things that I have to say. When you have a game, when you have 57 offensive plays with 82 yards, I don't think I've ever seen that in the NFL. 57 plays that netted 82 yards. It's unfathomable, honestly. And then under the statistics often do lie category, like that statistic doesn't lie. Here's a statistic that does lie. There's only one starting quarterback in the NFL who has not thrown an interception. It's Justin Fields. It clearly doesn't indicate his quality of play. He's got 7 touchdown passes and no interceptions. Obviously, it's because he's holding onto the ball too long, not taking chances. But it's funny the dynamic or the dichotomy when you look at stats that actually are relevant and stats that make no sense whatsoever and you can throw in the trash can. The fact that Justin Fields is the only starting quarterback in the NFL who has thrown a pick is
it's wild,
mind-boggling.
Well, and I feel like it's funny that you said the pressure cooker thing or the whatever you said. It's tough to play in New York. It's tough to be a sports, an athlete, a coach, or whatever in New York. And I like that only like – I'm not a fan of the owner. I think the fans are on him now. I've seen some things on social media. I mean, and you get put into that pressure cooker, and then now you're getting like, I mean, how many people did they interview to get to Aaron Glenn? So now you're kind of compounding the issue where you're going through coaches. Not only is it a unstable franchise with a questionable roster. I mean, they have some good pieces, but I feel like the delta between the top end and the bottom of their roster is massive. But and then you add on top of that the fact that you have to play in New York City and the pressure cooker in the Meadowlands, like it's such a toxic situation. I'm not sure. The only way this changes is if either Woody sells or when his kids get it, they bring in a president of football operations like an Elway or Carroll or who went down to Jacksonville and they got legitimate for a minute. The guy from the Giants,
Tom Coughlin.
So you need somebody like that to come in and actually like stabilize the franchise. I don't think there's anything you can do hiring and firing GMs and coaches.
Yeah, I think, well, look, Woody's kids are in high school, so it's going to be a while before they take over.
I keep forgetting that they're that fucking young making football decisions. It's like, yeah, dude, this dude has a superstar dev trade in Madden. Trade for him. F it, dude. Who cares? Anyway, yeah, dude, it was we'll skip the Sanchez stuff for now. We beat the shit out of the Jets, so fucking Sanchez not guilty. Sure. It was an absolute bloodbath in the pick section last week. I'm gonna throw it over to my confidant over here, Burge, with his fancy little spreadsheet to give us a rundown.
Yeah, it was not a good week for the three of us. At least we all won a game. At least we all got one win. Well, we'll start with myself. I had Denver -7.5 over in London against those Jets, and you know, I probably should have looked at the history between the Broncos and the Jets and all their matchups and how close those games were before I made that pick, but that was a loss.
But they were throwing rocks at themselves, if that makes sense. Like they were not throwing it at the other team. They were just simply inflicting on themselves.
Yeah, if I'd heard those numbers without any context from the Jets offense, I would have expected a blowout, but it wasn't that case. I also had San Francisco +3 against the Bucs. That didn't work out for me either. For the record, I was picking last again. I got thrown all the garbage for this week, so that's why my record stinks. And I had the LA Rams -7.5. That was a win. Manish, you had Dallas -3 against the Panthers. The Panthers won outright. That was not good. You squeaked out the Cincinnati +14. I got that win, sweated that one out. And then Detroit +2.5, the lock of the week. Pan out, much to all of our dismay with the Chiefs. The Chiefs won that game pretty handedly. Joe, you had the Chargers -3.5. The Chargers squeaked out that late victory, did not cover the points on that. You obviously had New England -3.5, got that win, and your boys, Tennessee, did not cover the 4.5 points there. So we all went 1-2.
The worst goddamn football game. I cannot believe I put money in. I cannot believe that I forced myself to watch that game. That was the worst. It was 10-0 with like 14 minutes left in the first quarter, dude. It was the worst. It was awful.
We're all 1-2. All 1-2 for the week. Standings don't change. Joe, you're still in the lead at 500. Manish, and I am actually in second at 8-10, and Manish 7-10-1. That lovely push is starting to hurt you here. So, on to week 7. So my first pick, for the record, I picked first, so I don't have anything to fall back on if this doesn't work out. I have the Indianapolis Colts +1 against the Chargers. The Chargers did just have a really tough time against the lowly Miami Dolphins. They squeaked out that win. I mean, the Colts also had a tough week. They squeaked out that win against Arizona, but I still haven't seen anything from the Indianapolis Colts to make me want to jump off that ledge yet. So I'm going to continue to ride them on the road in LA plus the 1.5. Next pick, a team that's kind of surprising me over the last couple of weeks since I played New England. I'm going to take the Carolina Panthers -1 against the lowly New York Jets. It seems like a pretty easy line to take there, -1 point. The Panthers have quietly, you know, coming off their win against Dallas, and then obviously they beat Miami the week before, but they're 3-3. I had to double take when I looked at their record. But I think Dallas was a legitimate opponent that they beat at home. So give me Carolina -1 on the road against the Jets, because the Jets also stink. Final pick of the week. Gee,
come on, guys. Come on. Shy listens. Shy, oh, we're sorry. Care.
No, oh no. We've had our fun with Shy over the years. He can take it. Final pick. I'm gonna take Dallas +2.5. They're playing the Commanders at home. Commanders are coming off their close loss on Monday night last night to the Bears. I think Dallas is gonna, this is a perfect bounce back game. It's a big game for them in the division. And I think that Dallas running game is going to get going a little bit better than it was against Carolina, where Javonte only had 29 yards on the ground. Javonte's had been a really great free agent ad for the Dallas Cowboys, and I like him to get back on track there. So give me Dallas plus the points. Joe?
All right, so I'm going to go with the Jags at home plus 4.5 versus the Rams. I love a home underdog. The Panthers showed what a home underdog can do this week. I think the Jags are playing pretty well. I think the Rams are good. They got off to a slow start versus the Ravens last week. I think if you get off to a slow start versus the Jaguars, it could be a lot closer of a game. I wouldn't pick the Jaguars outright here, but to keep it inside of a touchdown and at home, I think that's a pretty easy cover there. The Packers minus 6.5 at the Cardinals. I'm not sure if Kyler Murray is going to be back. Even if he is back, I don't know if you guys know, but it was double XP weekend in COD this weekend, and the new Battlefield just came out. So there's absolutely no way on God's green earth that I'm going to bet on the Cardinals. More yet, I'm going to bet against the Cardinals. So give me Jordan Love, the top five MVP candidate, going into the Cardinals, taking their chain and walking out of there covering 6.5. And then my last pick is a team that surprised me a little bit this week. Another team I don't expect to win, but I like them to keep it within a touchdown based on who they're playing and how they're playing. Give me the Saints plus 5.5 in Chicago. Spencer Rattler, I don't know if he's a top 15 quarterback, but he's definitely an NFL quarterback, maybe fringe starter. He's a really, really good backup. Somebody could come in and win a couple games for you. Jameis Winston, Case Keenum type. And I don't know if their defense is as bad as I think it is. I don't know. I just think they got some pieces there. They make it work. They keep it close. They play a pretty tidy game, even though it was a bunch of flags this weekend. I thought a bunch of them, even the ones on the Saints, were a bunch of them were bogus. And I'm not 100% sold on the Bears. I think this is another one where the Bears will probably have to kick a last-second field goal to win this game. Like I said, not going to pick the Saints to win, but I'll take the points 5.5 in Chicago.
All right. Well, let me start off and go against what Burge said. Colts, Chargers. Chargers are 1.5-point favorites. Colts are 5-1, 4-0 at home. Haven't really beaten anyone good other than the Broncos in week 2. And if you guys remember in that game, the Broncos should have won that game. I hate saying the word should, as I've mentioned many times, but there was a penalty, I think, on the game-winning field goal, something like that. Bottom line, they squeaked it out. They haven't beat anyone of consequence since then. They eked out a win against the lowly Cardinals without Kyler Murray at home last week. So I got no problem laying the 1.5 with the Chargers, who didn't look particularly impressive against Miami last week. Needed some Justin Herbert heroics down the stretch. We'll see if Quentin Johnston comes back. He was missing last week. Offensive line is still kind of in disrepair. But I'm a Justin Herbert believer, as I've stated many times. So I'll lay the 1.5 against, I think, a highly overrated Colts team, which we can get into later in the podcast. Then I'm going with Seattle, 3.5-point favorites at home against the Texans, who are coming off a bye and a blowout win against the Ravens. C.J. Stroud actually looked like a competent quarterback. He hasn't looked like a competent quarterback for much of the season. They've got an extra week to prepare for Seattle, but I'm a huge believer in what Sam Darnold is doing down there, winning on the road against Jacksonville last week. I think they're getting better and better in that Clint Kubiak offense. I really believe that Seattle is one of those teams that people are not really going to be talking about for much of the season, but they're going to be dangerous in the playoffs. Always a tough place to play in Seattle with crowd noise. Typically, that hurts quarterbacks. And when you're dealing with a quarterback who's playing behind a horrible offensive line in that environment, I can't pick you. So give me the 3.5. I'll take Seattle. They're on a roll. I think that's actually an easy win. That might be my lock of the week, actually. Then I'm going with my only underdog. My underdog.
You're giving out another one.
Yeah. Well, look, Seattle's winning. Okay. Let's be honest. It's just a matter of, are they going to cover the 3.5?
I love the conviction, dude.
I'm going with the only underdog is a home underdog. It comes with a caveat. I do reserve the right to change this before Sunday, but I'm taking Minnesota getting 2 points against the Eagles, who are coming off that embarrassing loss on Thursday night against the Giants. really got run over by Cam Scadabaugh. Jackson Dart was the best quarterback on the field that night. Jalen Hurts looked awful, you know, overthrew Devontae Smith for what would have been a 90-yard touchdown, somewhere thereabouts. Devontae was only open by about 9 or 10 yards. I guess if you were open by like 15 yards, Hurts would have hit him in stride and they would have scored. The Eagles are really in disarray right now. Offensive line has been a huge disappointment for a variety of reasons. Injuries are a part of it, but there's also some healthy guys on that offensive line that you typically can count on who aren't playing up to their level of play. So Saquon Barkley has been, you know, largely a non-factor. A weird game because he had two great runs to start off that game against the Giants, and then he was a no-show the rest of the way. A.J. Brown dissension, as much as the Patriot fans want him to eventually be traded to New England, I don't see him moving, but still he is not happy with the passing game, and nor should he be. The Eagles really are a mess in the secondary right now. I think that if Carson Wentz is the quarterback on Sunday, he will be able to find Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, TJ Hockenson. I don't think the passing game is going to be a problem because the Eagles have two of the worst cornerbacks that I have ever seen in my life, and that's Adoree Jackson, who probably should be retired, and Kelee Ringo, who's abysmal. And abysmal is probably too soft of a word. These guys are complete sieves. They're toast. I don't think the Minnesota is going to have any issue passing against the Eagles. I think Brian Flores is going to make life difficult for Jalen Hurts. And that's why I think Minnesota not only covers the two, I think they win outright.
All right.
I love hearing you talk about the Eagles, dude. It's so funny.
I mean, look, it's disappointing. I mean, as I've said many times privately, publicly, I'm a rational Eagles fan. I'm not just going to drink the Kool-Aid because they won the Super Bowl last year. I know what I see. And as I said a couple weeks ago with you guys, the offensive line has been a massive disappointment. The quarterback has been a massive disappointment. The defense is nowhere near what it was last year. And the secondary, frankly, is god-awful.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't argue with you whatsoever. I love hating on Philadelphia. It's the easiest thing to do. It runs through my veins. But those are the picks, dude. Follow, fade, do whatever you want. Make fun of us. Please engage, dude. We love those. We love going back and forth with the banter. If you guys have it the other side of a bet, please let us know about it. But let's get to the meat and potatoes here. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of the episode. Here come the between the tackles power rankings. You guys want to start with five again, and we'll work our way up to one, and then we'll hit some honorable mentions. All right, I'm gonna take the Rams at number five here. I'm just gonna keep rolling. Every week, I think we use the term coach quarterback combo. I think it is a hot button word. If you had a counter, it would be right up there near the F-bomb for me on this podcast history. So. Coach quarterback combo, coach quarterback combo, coach quarterback combo. The second half yesterday, Stafford looked second half on Sunday. Stafford looked young again. McVay was in his bag. I know they're going to be down Puka Nacua for a little bit with a pretty bad ankle sprain, but I think I think Matt Stafford has more than enough talent on that offense. They have the running game going. So I think the Rams are just a complete team. They're well coached. Like I said, the coach quarterback combo in this league means a lot. We had about four teams for this final spot, and I think we came up with the right one just based on the fact that if you put them up against the other teams we were going against, I would take the Rams probably three quarters of the time, if not 90% of the time, against those teams they were going against. Does anybody want to pick up number four and run with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about number four. It's a team that we included in our rankings last week. They've dropped a little bit in these rankings given the performance of some of these other teams, but it's the Indianapolis Colts. I just got done talking about them, how I think they're gonna beat the Chargers on Sunday. And they're a team that came out of nowhere at the beginning of the year. It's some controversy at quarterback with Anthony Richardson or Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones has played very well to start this year. Their only loss came against our fifth team on this list, and that's the Rams. Jonathan Taylor, again, is the resurgence of him this year has been awesome to see, coming off a nice 123-yard rushing performance against the Cardinals. And this is just a team that, again, continues to win. We can make arguments about the competition that they've played. But that's what these elite good teams do. They find ways to beat the teams, and they find ways to beat them rather handedly outside of, again, of last Sunday, which is why they have dropped down this ranking a little bit. They gotta show me a I don't want to say a cliff, but they gotta show me a decline before I start fading the Colts. I really like what they're doing there in Indianapolis, and I like them to continue there. I like them to continue this stretch. And Sunday's going to be a real test for them. I mean, the Chargers have had their share of issues, but it's going to be a legitimate test for this Indianapolis Colts team. We'll see if they sit here on our rankings next week at 4. So, Joe, you want to take 3?
Of course. Dare I say it again? Dare I say it again? Coach quarterback combo. The Lions at 3. Dan Campbell, come over and bite my kneecap anytime. Jared Goff, I think, has the 1 passer rating through 6 games in the league. I think their defense is still flying around. They got more than enough at weapons on offense. You see Jamison Williams coming alive last week. They still got Sonic and Tails in the backfield. So that team's loaded. I think Campbell's got them all pulling in the same direction again. They did go to Arrowhead and lose. I don't want to sound like Burge here, but there was a couple questionable calls there that I saw benefited by the Chiefs. I'm not going to be that guy because the Patriots benefited from the best call in the history of the NFL, so I can't be that guy. So I don't want to drop the Lions out. I truly believe that the 3rd best team in the NFL. There's a lot of teams in the league that I think that you would be, look at them and be like, yeah, I would put them. I would easily take them neutral field versus anybody in the league is what I'm trying to say. But yeah, give me Dan Campbell and Jared Goff, coach quarterback combo with the Lions at 3. Manisha, we got a 2.
Sticking with the Packers, you know, they came off the bye week, beat the Bengals, you know, but when you look at the score, maybe not as close as the score indicated. They had a 2-touchdown lead in the 4th quarter. Really solid up and down defense, offense. Matthew Golden, the rookie, first-round rookie wide receiver, is rounding into form, playing better. Josh Jacobs just keeps trucking along. You know, I think a lot of people were surprised at how effective he was last year in his first year in Green Bay. He's kind of picked up where he left off. The running game is stout. Jordan Love is making enough plays through the air, but they are a run-first team. And their defense, you know, outside of that 40-40 anomaly against the Cowboys, it has been pretty airtight. So, you know, they're a team that I think got a lot of buzz after that first week, and then maybe, you know, quieted down for a few weeks. But I think they're, you know, a top 5 team to stay for the majority of this season. With the Lions kind of rounding into form, I think you're going to see, much like you did last year, that division come down to the end. Last year, it was the Vikings and the Lions. This year, it'll come down to the Green Bay and Detroit.
Numero uno time.
Do it, Bears.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers sit at 1. Got to give some credit to my man Joe, who's been on this train for quite a bit with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they continue to just win at an elite level. And Baker Mayfield is, I'd argue, top 3 MVP. You know, right now, the way he's been playing.
Number one for me. I think it's Mayfield Mahomes right now. I don't want to hear Josh Allen. I don't want to hear anybody else. I think it's Mayfield Mahomes.
It's very well. I mean, I caught some of the glimpses of that game on Sunday against the 49ers. There was one play that he made to extend with his legs on a 3rd and long. And I believe what it was like the next play, he tosses the bomb to, I think it was, I don't even remember who it was. Because their receivers
Dude, they legitimately pulled out of the fucking stadium. Did you see the MVP chant thing?
Yeah. I missed that.
You did.
Dude, Tez caught that touchdown pass, dude, and the whole crowd starts chanting, MVP, MVP, dude. He goes back to the sidelines, dude, and he's like, dude, I can't believe they're all chanting MVP for me. And the whole wide receiver room just starts cracking up. They're chanting for Baker, you fucking idiot.
That's fantastic. 12 touchdowns, only 1 interception. He's on another level, and that's in spite of not having what his 1 and 2 receivers were going into this season, and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin for better parts of this year. Now they're going to be down to Mika Egbuka, who's going to be out for a few weeks. So that's a big loss. You're going to be playing with a lot of no-name receivers. Bucky Irving also has been out. It doesn't look like he's going to play in week 7 either, which kills me as a fantasy owner of Bucky Irving. He's got to get back on the field for me. But in the game, in his absence, Rashad White has stepped in, filled right in for him, averaging 4 yards a carry and involved in a little bit in the passing game as well. So they, I like them to just keep rolling. And, you know, again, they're coming up this week, you know, they're going to have, you know, none of their wide receivers, you know, they're playing the Detroit Lions on Monday night. Should be a good game. Again, measuring stick game for both of these two teams. Should be a fantastic game to watch. But right now, it's hard to argue with Tampa Bay sitting at one, coming off that big win this weekend. Joe, you got anything to add on them? Because I know they're your team.
Dude, I'm just a big I'm a believer, Baker believer. Dude, I just don't understand. He took the Browns. He took them and pushed KC to the brink of elimination to go to the AFC Championship. The Browns. We're talking about the Browns here. And then they kick them to the side. And I think I love Baker. I love his moxie. I love what he's about. I think the Carolina and then the Rams, I think that humbling and his rededication to the game is kind of what's making him flourish in Tampa Bay. So I hate saying humble and stuff like that for professional athletes, because I think their confidence and bravado is part of some of the reason why they are where they are and why they're so successful, and specifically with Baker. But I think him being humbled by kind of being a backup for a little bit is really making him, for lack of a better term, take this opportunity with the Buccaneers by the balls and really putting in the best effort. And he is a gamer, dude. He does not like to lose, dude. He doesn't like it. And I think it was a good at the podium where he was basically like, yeah, when you win, it goes from cocky and stuck up to he's a dog, he's a grinder, he's a fighter. So it's kind of funny how the narrative changes on a guy like that. But I do think that winning is a part of it, but I do think that he has the most to do with it by going to those places, getting humbled and coming back and honestly resurrecting his career from the dead.
Dude, you know what's funny? A couple years ago, Darnold and Baker Mayfield were on the same team, and they were backups at various points in the season to P.J. Walker. So Steve Wilks, who I believe was the interim coach for Carolina at the time, chose P.J. Walker over Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield. And now Baker, as you said, has had this metamorphosis, this resurrection, and Darnold along the same lines. So just a funny dynamic, you know, having both of those guys who are legitimately MVP candidates. I agree with you, Joe, that Baker is the leader in the clubhouse. I think Darnold's in the MVP conversation. But the fact that both of those guys just a few years ago were back.
Walker. He plays in the CFL, dude. Oh, my God. That's so good. Hey, Manish, do you have an honorable mention you want to get to for the power rankings?
Yeah, it's a team that you had mentioned a minute ago, the Chiefs. You know, honestly, I think we all – owe the Chiefs an apology. It wasn't that long ago where we were basically calling them, you know, dead in the water. And I remember before the season started, I didn't have them winning the AFC West.
I was telling you guys, this is the new Patriots. I told you guys, I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah, they're just kind of look, and they get Rashee Rice back, so their number one wide receivers are turning. But just what you saw the other night against Detroit, it was very much like the Chiefs that we're used to seeing. So maybe it was premature to say that they're dead and buried, but Patrick Mahomes is playing as good as he's played in like 2 years. To be honest, he looks very much like the Patrick Mahomes who was a leading MVP candidate and MVP winner several years back. I think it's funny that even though they are behind two teams currently in the standings in the AFC West, they are still or not still, but they are now betting favorite to win the AFC West, despite Denver and Los Angeles having a better record than them. I think they're just going to take off. You know, they've got the last. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think they're looking great. Worthy clearly is getting back into the rhythm of things, and then when they add Rice, they're going to make their offense that much more potent. They still don't have a running game, so I don't know how that's going to last throughout the course of the season. But Patrick Mahomes is doing what all of us, you know, had become accustomed to seeing from him over the last, you know, 5-6 years.
I just think, Mahomes is, I don't care what clips on Twitter I see of his arm strength diminishing or him doing this or dude, the dude wins football games. It's just what it is. He just fucking wins, dude. The game is so slow for him. He's the best player on the field every time he steps on it. I'm not a huge Chiefs guy. I'm not a huge Chiefs fanboy, but I am a believer in Patrick Mahomes. Shout out to Shiloh if you're still listening, if you didn't turn it off after all the Jets slander. He wanted Mahomes in like much higher. I think he got picked 10th. The Chiefs traded up to like 10 to get him or 7 or something like that. But he called him coming out of the draft. So shout out to Shy on that one. It's not all bad news for you on this podcast, buddy. I want to touch on another blue blood NFL team on honorable mentions here, the Steelers. Speaking of the guy that went to legitimately football hell and back, Aaron Rodgers went to the Jets last year, last 2 years, popped his Achilles. They really didn't make any noise last year. And then he comes to the Steelers, a competent operation, looks like he's bought in and giving a shit. So I think that those two things, plus Tomlin and that defense, I don't know. We talk about coach quarterback combo a lot in this podcast. I'm going to say it again, dude. Coach quarterback combo here with the Steelers is elite. I think Tomlin's a top 10 coach. I think Aaron Rodgers is a top 10 quarterback. So I don't think there's any way that the Steelers should be ignored this year. Do it, Burge. Fucking I do have... it, dude. Sorry for swearing, dude. I'm getting so amped up right now, dude.
My honorable mention, the Homer, the Patriots, coming off a massive win against the Buffalo Bills a week ago, took care of business in New Orleans. Drake May just continues to show that he is playing at an MVP level right now. The defense is doing its thing too, you know, fighting through some injuries. You know, the run defense, unbelievable with what they've been doing there. They're the only team that hasn't allowed a single individual running back to rush for 50 yards in a single game in all six of their games. You take a look at the schedule that they have. It's the easiest schedule across the league. Might be one of the easiest in the you know, recent history or NFL history for that matter. I think I saw something about that with the layout of teams that they have to face the remaining weeks of the season. If you take a look at the top leaderboard for the NFL draft, it's basically the Patriots schedule. And so there's a lot to be said about where this team can go this year. And you couple that with the, you know, Joe, you just got done talking about coach quarterback combo, and Drake May is just showing that he is that guy. And we all know Mike Vrabel's history, and, you know, he continues to do it here in New England, which is fantastic. Thank you, Tennessee, for firing him. Just wish it was a year earlier, but you know, if they continue to play and take care of business, take care of the football, you know, have that defense that can, you know, basically force a team into throwing all the time because they're stuffing the running game. I mean, the mantra that we can go into this with before we get into start talking about the game against the Saints and everything is why not? Why can't the Patriots make some noise this year? Everything's kind of falling in line for them to do that, barring any kind of injury, to Drake May. I mean, this may be a biased take. I'm sure it is a biased take. I know Manish has his opinions on all this, but why not? Why can't they make the noise? I mean,
take a page out of the Red Sox playbook, dude. Why not us, bro? Why not us?
Dude, exactly. And, you know, the AFC is wide open this year. And, I mean, we just got done, you know, talking about all these teams that have come out of the gate and are playing at a high level right now. But, I mean, the Bills lost last night. Patriots currently sit in first place in the AFC East. It's been a long time since...
Fourth place in the AFC overall.
Yeah. First time that has been a legitimate thing, right? First time. I mean, we can go back to when they were the one seed in the conference after the win game in 2021.
2021, yeah.
Like, you can go back to that. But I think a lot of sensible people really knew that team really was not going to go anywhere. They were barely kind of neutered on offense with what Mac Jones could do. This feels different. This feels a lot different. And Joe, you got anything to add before you want to break it down? Let's hear it.
I am so feloniously fired up about this Patriots team. You are seeing, to quote the best online video of all time, we are seeing shit we ain't never seen before, kid. This is insane. The pocket presence, the ability to keep his eyes downfield and move the ball downfield. Drake May is going to deliver us from evil, deliver us to the promised land. He is currently parting the Red Sea, and we are walking beneath the fish to the promised land. I don't understand. It is insane the upward trajectory this kid was on. Last year, he was a turnover machine. But I heard a very good point. I heard a very good point that I'm going to get to try to get to here. He is a turnover machine coming into this year. Week one, you see them run the traditional Tom Brady McDaniels offense. He's holding on to the ball. He doesn't look comfortable. He's overthrowing guys, and it doesn't really. You can kind of see through the poo poo, and you see the diamonds. You can kind of see it a little bit. And then these last five games, man, have been un-effing believable. Almost 80% completion percentage. He's top five in yards and touchdowns in touchdown and touchdown to interception ratio. There's so many things this kid can do. He's athletic. He's accurate. He can throw it downfield. And a very good point I heard made is these mistakes, these interceptions, these turnovers that Drake May is making, they're not bad decisions. Like, he's not deciding to go to the wrong person with the ball. He's simply overthrowing somebody or making a bad throw. So the processing power that was his Achilles heel that thought coming out was that short intermediate passing range, the gotta have it kind of stuff. We knew he was athletic. We knew he threw the ball downfield. But, man, has he shut up every critic to his game, throwing between the numbers, gotta have it plays, accuracy in the middle of the field, accuracy on the short and intermediate part of the field. I don't know, man. I gotta find my pants. I lost them there somewhere in this diatribe. But the whole thing about the Patriots here, the entire thing is Drake May. They go as long as he takes them, and that's it. I don't know. I have a lot of other stuff to say about the Patriots here, but Burge, I'll let you take it back because I need to cool off a second.
Well, I think you touched on a big thing with the processing and basically his mental makeup. And you kind of got a bit taste of it on Sunday when he threw that second touchdown to DeMario Douglas. That was called back on an absolutely bogus phantom pass interference call. Probably one of the worst calls that I've ever seen. Rivals the one with the Saints and the Rams years back in the playoffs. You know, if he didn't have that of that mental toughness, you could see a quarterback in this league have that derail him for that drive, for that quarter, for that half, for that game. You see it happen all the time. What does Drake May do on that drive? Finishes the drive with a touchdown to Kayshon Booty with an absolute money throw. Like, you can just see that processing and that mental toughness come in where, like, you have this awesome play. It was executed perfectly, and it gets called back on a bogus penalty where the refs can start getting in your head. We can get to the refs, you know, whenever you want to get to the officiating in this game.
I'm having a good night.
But, like, you get in, you see that. A lot of quarterbacks fold under that, and Drake May didn't. And, in fact, he excelled in that situation.
He doesn't have a running game. They call back 120 yards and a touchdown. They can't effing block. I don't care what anybody says. Oh, Will Campbell. What, dude, he allowed four pressures. Mike Onwenu gets blown up every game. The dude's running for his life, and it's all on him. He's 23 years old, and he's the best player on your team. And it is all about – we say it 10 times on this podcast. I'm going to say it 10 million times more. It's all about the coach-quarterback combo. I didn't see the vision with Mike Vrabel, and it wasn't – these teams, it's going away from the Patriots of old, this buttoned up. Maybe we don't have a crap load of talent, but we have a good middle of the roster. Everybody's a smart, heady player. Do your job. Be where you're supposed to be. This iteration of the Patriots is – holy effing S. We have athletes and playmakers all over the Pop Douglas is our ninth receiver, catches a 50-yard bong on one of the first pass plays of the game. Like, it's a totally different team. It's gonna take a little getting used to for me because they're winning in a little different of a way. But the power rankings aside, I think putting the Patriots in the top 10 is even iffy right now. They're definitely in the top half of the league, but you see Drake May elevating guys like Pop Douglas, Kayshon Booty, Hunter Henry, the resurrection of Stephon Diggs, dude. Stephon Diggs, besides that big one he's negated, dude, his three receptions were all for first downs, dude. Kayshon Booty, 18, 19 receptions for first downs. Out of those 18 first downs, 17 are over 10 yards. Like, there's so many good things. It's all Drake May. Josh McDaniels notwithstanding, but, like, it looks like you drafted the wrong running back out of a SEC – no, out of a Big Ten school. It looks like you drafted the wrong running back again. Another Sony Michel fucking Nick Chubb situation. It looks like you're just cutting everybody besides Drake May from the 2024 draft. Not a single one of them can play. So there's a lot of things wrong. They have zero competent safeties besides that Woodson kid. That he looks like he's coming on. They have zero competent safeties. The offensive line still needs work. They need to figure out how to run the ball. But there are so many promising things, like the middle of the defensive line, mm-hmm. the emergence of Marcus Jones as an absolute playmaker. Pop Douglas back on the reservation in producing. There's so many positives to take away from this game. I think the Saints are a little bit better than we gave them credit for. They put up a decent fight. But, dude, I am just so finally, dude, finally we get to have these weeks, dude. We went through 20 effing how many weeks of just wanting to throw this laptop against the wall after I'm done with this podcast, going straight to bed, shutting the lights off, not even watching anything, just going straight to fucking bed because I'm so exhausted from talking. Now I am going to go take a lap around my neighborhood and jump in a pool just to calm down, dude. This is just. It's so much more fun when the team is good. And not only are they good, it's not 6-0 good. It's not three effing passes against the Bills in a windstorm good. It's Drake May. Here's my giant effing schmens, and I'm going to drag it all around your face the entire game. Dude, it's so it feels so good again.
It's so nice to be able to do a podcast with you when the Patriots are actually decent. We started doing this thing right at the end of Bill Belichick. So most of our conversations about the Patriots have been miserable, miserable. And now after these last 2 weeks, like I'm like you, like take the pants. I'm having trouble keeping the pants on. Like I'm just like you with it. Like the Bills lose 2 weeks in a row. The Bills lose 2 weeks in a row. It was a bad game last night. One of them was to the Patriots and the Patriots sit atop the division. Like, and then you're staring down this schedule. You're staring down this schedule of just junk. Now I'm not saying they're going to win every one of them. But, like, they have a legitimate shot and an opportunity here to make a run at the division. Like, no one's sitting here calling them Super Bowl contenders, even though Manish was trying to throw that at me earlier today in the group chat. You were.
Hang on. First of all, if you look at the 6-7 games before the bye, it's actually a little bit more difficult than we thought a couple weeks ago because
Atlanta looks good.
Tampa Bay is number one in our power rankings. The Bengals with Joe Flacco in about a month are considerably better than when they had Jake Browning at quarterback. And the Giants just beat the Eagles, and Jackson Dart looks like the real deal as well. So that's not going to be a layup either. So if you look at these, seven games before the bye, more than half of them, are not cupcakes. So I do want to pause there and not just say, hey, the Patriots don't play anybody over the next month and a half, because there are some challenges there, potential landmines. What I will say is that, look, I am as encouraged by Drake May as both of you guys. I'm a big Drake May believer. I was a big believer last year, even when he was committing those turnovers. I thought he was better than Jane Daniels, even though the numbers didn't reflect that last year. Just the way he plays the position, and I think over time that'll unfold and be clear that he is the best quarterback in that draft class. All that being said, Joe, you outlined all of the deficiencies on this team. You know, no running game, defensive issues, offensive line not so great. So you have a promising second year quarterback and a head coach you believe in. That's not enough. That's enough to be in the playoff conversation, but I think it was you, Berger, just said, you know, why not us? Why can't we win the division? Well, you guys just explained why you can't win the division. There's too many other deficiencies. Now, will they be in the mix? Of course they will. They just beat the Bills. To say that they're not going to be in the mix, I think would be foolish. But I just think that they're not strong enough as a full unit, even though the quarterback has shown that he can do some exceptional things in the first 6 weeks. It's not enough. They do need a running game. The offensive pass interference that you outlined earlier, notwithstanding, they had 10 other penalties. I mean, these are issues that have consistently cropped up to this point. So there's 7 playoff teams. Do I think they're going to make the playoffs? I do. Are they going to be in the mix? Obviously, if I think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to win the division. I know the Bills did not look good the other night against the Falcons. The Bills are a better football team. They're going through a two-game rough patch, but they're a better football team. They have the best player on either team by a mile. I know that you guys think Drake May is the next Josh Allen, and Josh Allen's not that good. I'm being objective. No, I'm not a fan of the Bills. I'm not a fan of the Patriots. Josh Allen is a guy who can carry a team to a division title. Drake May, in his second season, is not a guy who can carry a team to this team specifically to a division title.
Yeah, and I think obviously you have to put into context with what like the last 2 years for the Patriots have been. You know what I mean? Like, we've matched our win total from last year in 6 weeks. So I think while Burge and I are obviously extremely excited and encouraged, I think that you have to put it into context. Even though I think Drake May is a legitimate at this point, a legitimate MVP candidate, I don't think that that automatically makes the Patriots a Super Bowl contender whatsoever. I honestly think that even their personnel, even at their strong points, need to improve. I don't think you can win a Super Bowl with that offensive line. I don't think you can win a Super Bowl with that kind of pass rush just coming from the middle. I don't think you can win a Super Bowl with that group of off-ball linebackers. And definitely don't think you can win a Super Bowl with the safeties after you're sending a quarter blitz and Duggar gets caught with his pants down. Not like me with my pants down right now, but getting caught with your pants down. First play of the game, letting up a 50-yard bomb. So there are a lot of flaws to the Patriots game. And I think the way that Drake May is able to mask it in game and then after, obviously, with how we feel, is the most encouraging part about the team. Is like the fact that he can carry and he can elevate. I mean, dude, besides Stephon Diggs, I mean, he's throwing to. I mean, Hunter Henry's a good, not great player. He's not the Stephon Diggs caliber. He's not a top five, top 10 tight end in the league. He's probably top half of the league. And then you're throwing to young, unproven guys, and like, they haven't had a good quarterback, and all it takes is a good quarterback, and look what's happening. So I think he has the ability to elevate, like you said, Manish, is the ability to elevate this roster to a deep playoff run or a division title this early in his career? Probably not. It would be friggin' sick, but probably not. But I think tempered expectations for the team, but complete pants off for Drake May's ceiling is kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, look, if I were a Patriot fan, I'd be ecstatic. I'm not a Patriot fan.
Come on to the dark side, Manish.
Come on.
Look, I'm not a Patriot fan. I'm a fan of a team that just won the Super Bowl, and I'm envious of your quarterback. That should tell you how much I like Drake May. I think the sky's the limit. The sky's the limit for him. I am super excited for what the future, what the future is for this player. I think he's going to be a dynamic player when they beef up the roster, skill position wise and offensive line wise. You're going to see him take off to a different level. I just think that, given the current circumstances, while they're so much better than they were even a year ago, it takes a lot, and it's a long season. It takes a lot for one guy to kind of drag your team to winning your division, regardless of what division you're in. And I just don't think he's there yet, but tremendous player. And one other thing, Joe, I do want to touch on really quickly. You said something in passing that I think is worth repeating. Kayshon Boutte has the most interesting stat line. He's got 18 catches, 16 of the 18 are for first downs. And I think percentage wise, about 90%. Of his catches are for first downs. That leads the NFL. It's interesting that guy, seems to be the guy that May goes to, outside of the Bills game, of course, when he, needs a big play or needs, a critical first down.
Well, he was a five-star wide receiver recruit going into LSU. He's only 23 years old. He was the fastest LSU wide receiver to 100 catches. Think about that. Justin Jefferson, Odell Beckham Jr., all of those guys. He was faster to 100 catches. Yeah. Huh?
Jamar Chase?
Yeah. Jamar Chase. He's faster to 100 catches at LSU than all of those, everybody at wide receiver U. He showed flashes with legitimate dog poo-poo at quarterback. And I don't know. I think he has excellent body control. I saw some tape on him the other day that he's not even a true X outside receiver. He's more of a Y, route running receiver. But dude, his body control, his way to high point the football, and most importantly, he has, dude, we ranked on Rob Gronkowski all the time for being dumb and for being basically a golden retriever. But his football IQ when you got inside the lines was immaculate. It was the same as Tom Brady's. Him and Tom Brady can get on the same page. That's how you know you have a high IQ. Kayshon Booty's IQ, The hole shot in the Bills game and staying on the ground, staying in bounds on the third down conversion this week, dude. There's so many, and then let alone mossing a guy in the back of the end zone and having two touchdowns on five receptions for 90 yards and two touchdowns. Like on top of that, you making all the heady plays. I don't know, man. I don't think it'll be like a perennial Pro Bowler or anything like that. But I think like legitimate starting NFL wide receiver is now the floor for Kayshon Booty.
I'm right there with you. We got to be excited for it, man. Like the last 2 weeks of football have been the most fun I've enjoyed. How much I've enjoyed football for the last 2 weeks more than I've enjoyed
I'm
football in the
at
last
my
5 years.
And running up and down the hallway again. I'm on my phone. But the last 2 years, I'm on my phone by halftime chasing a back, dude. Like now, I am. My dogs don't even want to be in the house. I'm yelling at my. Football is so
I'm gonna end up. Anyway, I'm gonna end up biting a hole in my lip so I don't drop a cuss word in front of my 5 year old so he starts repeating that at school. That's where I'm at. Biting a hole in my friggin' lip.
I can teach him some good ones.
Anyway, oh, I know.
anyways, boys, you guys got some sleepers for me, some picks for me, some fantasy stuff for me to end the podcast here.
Go ahead, Manish.
Yeah, look, we talked about the Bucs being banged up. You had mentioned, Burge, that they're going to be down their top three wide receivers in addition to Bucky Irving. To me, that opens the door for Cade Otton. He's had 11 targets the last two games, over 130 yards, a guy that Baker Mayfield has relied on in the past. He's had an interesting season because he's kind of been invisible for the first, had been invisible for the first month or so. These last two games, he's showed some signs of life. I just think that with so many injuries, they're so depleted. They're going to have to score playing the Lions. The points are going to be incredibly critical because I think the Lions will be able to put up some against Tampa. I think Baker Mayfield relies on Cade Otton. He's a guy I think that could do some damage this week. I have an honorable mention, Jordan Addison, for the reasons I outlined earlier. The Eagles secondary absolutely sucks, and I think Carson Wentz specifically can help out Addison, who's been really good after the three-game suspension last couple games. He had a 100-yard game. He scored last week. So he's kind of, picking up where he left off last season. I just think against the depleted Eagles secondary, or actually not even depleted, Quinion Mitchell might not play. But other than that, their regulars aren't particularly good. So I like Cade Otton and Jordan Addison this week.
I had to do a deep dive for this one because you guys took some pretty good ones. Harold Fannin Jr. with the Cleveland Browns. Sounds like Javon Njoku's gonna Harold Fannin Jr.
Okay.
Cleveland Browns tight end. Sounds like David Njoku might miss this week. Fannin was able to step in last week with and put together a pretty productive performance after David Njoku left the game. They're playing the Dolphins, and we all know what the Dolphins are right now. They give up a lot of yards to tight ends. So he's my guy for this week if you need a tight end filler.
Love that.
A tight end filler from last week. Did you guys check out Aron?
We did.
How do you
speak? Aronde Gadsden. Third or whatever.
Junior.
Not the third.
He had 12 points, and if he didn't fumble, you had 14.
Dude, yeah, I didn't listen to you, and I dropped him. I'm an idiot. I didn't listen
to you. Yeah, I picked him up Sunday morning when I found out that Quentin Johnston was inactive.
All right, so my sleeper this week, I don't know how much of a sleeper it is, but I pull in a lot of two quarterback leagues where you need a lot of quarterbacks. Spencer Rattler, he's getting a lot of usage on the ground, a lot of usage RPO. He's a useful little player. I don't think he's a superstar or anything like that, but if you need a stopgap quarterback for a two quarterback lead or just need a quarterback for your when you're on a bye, you want to stream one in a single quarterback league, I think that's a really valuable he's a really valuable piece. I've been trying to trade for him. Brooks, if you're listening, I'm not done. And then the other one, did I have another one? No, I just wanted to peek out about Gadsden. That's it. You guys got anything else?
That's it for me.
I'm good.
All right.
Let's go. Let's go, Pats.
Shout out to DJ Khaled. Thanks for coming on the pod. But this has been another episode of Between the Tackles. I'm Joe. That's Manish and Burge alongside as well. We'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Later.